Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This week, as early voting and mail-in voting take place in the New York primary, we are devoting part of the show each day, and we'll do one on the mayoral race later on. Really interesting developments in the last day, as there have been every day. But we're devoting part of the show each day this week to selected races in each borough. Monday was Brooklyn, yesterday was Queens, and today it's Manhattan, where there is a lot to talk about. Manhattan is used to being the center of the universe, right? Or at least the city. The term outer borough refers to all the boroughs that aren't Manhattan. But it has lost a bit of luster when offices and hotels shut down during the pandemic, not to mention lost a bit of money. Almost every council seat in Manhattan is up for grabs. The current borough president is term limited out and running for one of those city council seats, by the way, Gail Brewer. And the current district attorney, Cy Vance, chose not to run again, opening up one of the most high-profile prosecutor's offices in the country. And again, these are primary races in a borough where party affiliations skew so overwhelmingly Democratic that the winners of these races will almost certainly be the winners in November. To talk about as much of this as we can get to and some through lines that cut across all these races is Ben Max, executive editor of Gotham Gazette and host of the podcast Max Politics. Hey, Matt. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Brian. Good to be with you.
So where to start? Where to start? Maybe with the DA's race, if for no other reason than it's probably generated the most work for the post office, at least up until about a week ago when the other races started to catch up. So many mailers, mainly from Tully Farhady and Weinstein, who made headlines this week with her latest campaign finance disclosure that she had donated over $8 million to herself. For people who've maybe seen the flyers, seen some TV commercials, but don't really know, who is Tully Weinstein?
Well, what's interesting about this is she's an extremely qualified and experienced prosecutor and attorney. She also is very, very wealthy, in part due to her husband's wealth. And so she's, you know, received a lot of endorsements. She's a very formidable candidate no matter what, but now we've seen her in essence, trying to combine that resume with, in some sense, you know, buying the election through pumping all these millions of dollars into it and, creating a very uneven playing field. This is technically a state election, so there is no campaign finance public matching system. This is just a free for all. There's no, you know, there's very, very high contribution limits. There's no public matching, like I said, and there's also no ranked choice voting in the district attorney primary. Folks should know that as well, unlike all these other races we'll talk about. So she's, in essence, flooding everybody's mailboxes, as you said, and doing so much more with all this money that she's trying to overwhelm the rest of this field, which has a number of other strong candidates as well, but without those resources.
She's that rich, huh, that she could donate $8 million to her own campaign?
Well, apparently, and also, you know, her wealth and her husband's wealth and his, finance ties have also been, a source of discussion and controversy during the race already, short of all this money that they're now putting into the race, questions around whether she would be a tough enough district attorney on Wall Street or if, she would need to recuse herself from some major cases. She defended herself very well on those charges in terms of saying, you know, you really should not be holding a spouse's profession against anyone running for office. And that's certainly fair, but there's legitimate questions around some of this. But then the biggest question now is the amount of money, you know, that she's flooding this race with to try to overwhelm the field.
Weinstein has the Daily News and the Post's endorsement. I think I saw Hillary Clinton just came out for her. But then there's Alvin Bragg, who got the New York Times endorsement in this race. He's a former assistant U.S. attorney and was also endorsed by his well-known former boss, Preet Bharara, from when he was the U.S. attorney in New York, and Alvin Bragg worked for him. So who else is Alvin Bragg besides somebody who used to work for Preet Bharara? And are there policy differences between Weinstein and Bragg, if they are two of the big horses in this race?
Right. They're undoubtedly two of the top, if not the two top, you know, sort of front runners in the race. But I don't think we should discount at least a couple other candidates and their potential chances. Something like a district attorney race, even though there's been some limited polling that I don't really know is fair to even go into because of how large the undecided population is. You know, it's very hard to predict this race, but clearly Bragg and Weinstein have had the biggest profiles, maybe among a couple others in the race. Bragg was also a top deputy to the New York State Attorney General. You know, he's had a long and extensive career as well. Both he and Farhadeen Weinstein are among, you know, basically half the field is former prosecutors and then almost half the field is not. And that's one of the big dividing lines in this race. And the folks who haven't been prosecutors are running as, you know, major reformers to the office, whereas the people who've been prosecutors are running on some reform, you know, to varying degrees. Bragg is somewhere in the middle. He is a former prosecutor, but he's running, you know, as more of a reformer, it seems, than Weinstein. And also Liz Crotty, I should mention, is running as sort of the most traditional law and order, tough on crime candidate. She's got the backing of, you know, the police unions, for example. And then you have Lucy Lang, who's also sort of in the middle with Bragg. And then further to the left, you have Assemblymember Dan Cord, public defender Eliza Orlins, and civil rights attorney Tahani Ibushi, that are all trying to sort of compete for that pretty far left lane of dismantling a lot of what the office does because they say, you know, it inflicts so much harm on people and is part of the sort of carceral system that needs to be rethought.
And that, I guess, is another way to sort the candidates, those who, and now looking beyond Bragg and Weinstein, so we don't just talk about them, the other candidates, sort them into those who have been prosecutors before and those who are coming from outside of that system as reformers. So Liz Crotty, former prosecutor, as you say, the most law and order candidate or traditional candidate in the group. Lucy Lang, who teaches at John Jay College of Criminal Justice and worked with Cy Vance, so in that office. And then the outsiders, Dan Cord, who's a politician, state assembly member, Tahani Ibushi, a civil rights attorney. So always interesting when somebody with that background wants to become a prosecutor, and similar with Eliza Orlins because she's been a defense attorney. So again, listeners, like we've been saying all week, we can't go so deeply into every candidate in these races with so many candidates that you can decide based on this show, but we're trying to give you an overview just so that more people vote. So go and do your homework, Manhattanites, if you haven't already, on these DA candidates, but there's a little place for you to start, hopefully. Okay, the other borough-wide race in Manhattan is for borough president. Gail Brewer's term limited out and running for her old city council seat, which we'll get to. And there are seven candidates for the Democratic nomination for Manhattan Borough President, which weighs in on land use decisions and has some funds for programs and projects. And oh boy, Lindsay Boylan, Elizabeth Caputo, Brad Hoylman, Benjamin Kalos, Mark Levine, Guillermo Perez, and Kimberly Watkins. Let's start with the two city council members in the race, Mark Levine and Ben Kalos, and a state senator, Brad Hoylman. So these are the elected politicians, might have some name recognition going for them in the race. The others have not been in elected office before, although Lindsay Boylan did make news this year as Governor Cuomo's first accuser, but she's much more than that. She has a lot of experience running things, including, you know, very significant policy areas in the governor's office. So, as well as Elizabeth Caputo, who's been a major player in New York parks and neighborhoods for a long time. So tell us. Let's take Lindsay Boylan first. What's her experience?
Well, her experience is in economic development and planning. And as you said, she worked at some of the highest levels of state government. She's held other positions, but she is basically running a pretty sort of progressive far left campaign, but also very much focused on the idea of her expertise in sort of urbanism and planning and economic development, and being able to sort of merge a very progressive ideology with the idea of, you know, plotting out Manhattan's future when it comes to things like economic development, but also open space, parks, street use, and things of that nature.
How about Elizabeth Caputo?
She's been a community board chair on the Upper West Side. She has also had an extensive career, also sort of in economic development and policy. She is making a somewhat similar pitch, but definitely more sort of in the moderate lane. She really focuses on the need to revitalize the economy, but she's also talking a lot about doing proper planning. She is, you know, it's a theme in the borough president race and also in the city council races. On there's so many candidates who are running largely opposed to new development and, you know, sort of key land use issues. And Elizabeth Caputo takes, you know, a very sort of measured approach to this and talks about how, you know, Manhattan needs to, you know, continue to build and grow.
And among the three elected officials in the race, Mark Levine and Ben Kalos from City Council and State Senator Brad Hoylman, would it be accurate to say that Levine has broken out a little bit from that pack?
I would say so, but I would say that Brad Hoylman also is very strong. Ben Kalos, you know, has a very interesting resume and a lot of accomplishments, especially on things like government reform and campaign finance reform in the City Council, which has been what his career has been highlighted by even before elected office. And so Kalos, as a, you know, as a reformer and as someone with a, you know, a lot of thoughtful policy, should not be counted out. But Levine and Hoylman certainly have a lot of momentum, and Levine probably more so in terms of endorsements and just sort of the energy behind their campaigns. I would, you know, say if you're just sort of putting a finger in the air or taking a snapshot right now, you know, Levine looks in very strong position, but Hoylman's also, you know, in pretty good shape.
What would you say is one major accomplishment or policy concentration in the career of Mark Levine for people who don't know him, and one for Brad Hoylman?
So Mark Levine, I have to quickly say too, you know, he's the health committee chair of the City Council and became very well known for all the sort of COVID information he was putting out on social media, sometimes with a few mistakes in there that should be highlighted, but also taking, you know, really serious stances on what the mayor and governor were not doing well or right. And he was mostly right on those assessments. But the thing I think is very important to highlight in Levine's City Council career is that he was one of the driving forces, one of the top couple driving forces on the right to council legislation that has helped prevent tens of thousands of evictions. And I don't think there's anybody who would take that away from him. It's one of the biggest, you know, legislative accomplishments in the city in a long time. Oh, and Hoylman. Hoylman has many, many legislative accomplishments in the state, especially since Democrats took over the state Senate in the last couple of years. Hoylman's running, you know, to be the first openly LGBT Manhattan borough president, I believe. And he, you know, has a lot of accomplishments related to LGBT rights.
One other candidate, Kimberly Watkins, yeah. Former auxiliary police officer.
Kim Watkins is running, you know, the sort of most insurgent outsider campaign here. She's got the least sort of, you know, government-related credentials, but she's been a community education council president. She's running, very interestingly, on the need to put, you know, more nurses and other, you know, helpful people in schools, like guidance counselors, but she has a real focus on the need for nurses in schools. And because of her education background, she's also running on dismantling mayoral control of city schools, which might appeal to some people and of course might not to others. But it's a pretty, you know, it's a sort of bold policy idea that she's running on.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, Ben Max from Gotham Gazette is my guest, and we're running down some of the most interesting races in the New York primary in the borough of Manhattan. If anybody has a question, we can take it. Time for a few phone calls in our remaining time in this segment. Let's say no electioneering today. There are just so many races. Don't call up and say, for DA, I'm for this one, or for borough president, I'm for that one, because we're not going to be able to have time to have kind of a balanced take and get a lot of people endorsing and a lot of other people. I hope you get it. But if you have a question, something that that Ben can help clarify about any of the city council or Manhattan borough president or DA races, DA race in Manhattan, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. City council races, Ben. Oh, or listeners, and maybe this is best for this segment, you can tweet your question at Brian Lehrer. City council races, there are 10 districts in Manhattan, and only one of them, the fourth district on the east side, is not open or have a serious challenge to the incumbent, which makes it tough for reporters whose beat is Manhattan. But for voters, they just have to know about their own district. You want to just maybe pick one, or I'll pick one. The homelessness issue and quality of life concerns, Royal District 6. Maybe start there?
Sure, yeah. The all of the issues around the Lucerne and how
Upper West Side, I should say, yeah,
and how homeless New Yorkers were treated during COVID or and really under any circumstances in terms of the use of shelters and hotels and what services are provided, and then related issues has really been a key issue there. That issue, as you mentioned, that race is really fascinating because you have Gail Brewer, the borough president, trying to go back to her old city council seat. And so that certainly in some ways convinced some potential candidates to not run because she's seen as such a heavy favorite. There is an interesting field of six candidates. They all have thoughtful policy agendas that people should look up. I've moderated a debate in almost all of these city council districts in Manhattan, and they're very interesting discussions about the future of these neighborhoods. The biggest challenger to Brewer, who is clearly a heavy favorite, is probably Sarah Lind, who is running a very different campaign than most of the other candidates. She's really running on sort of a pro-growth, pro-development, increased housing, increased affordable housing campaign, open space and things of that nature, which some of those things the other candidates agree on, but she's really staked out a lot of ground around her proposals around housing. And of course, Brewer's running on her history serving the district and constituent services and, livability issues. And then I'll also highlight, there's a candidate, Maria D'Angelo, who's running, among others, on a much more sort of clean up the neighborhood. Things are a little out of control. We need to get a little tougher on issues like public safety and homelessness that, clearly there's some folks in that district who that's appealing to. There's always questions around people's, compassion and tone around these things. But those are a few dividing marks in that race.
How about District 1 in Lower Manhattan? Margaret Chin's seat, the one she's vacating because of term limits, the lower tip of Manhattan up to Washington Square Park or so. So Chinatown and Tribeca, Washington Square Park itself has been a flashpoint. She was the first Asian American elected there to city council. So there's history there that will continue or not. How about District 1?
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that, because if you'd asked me to pick one to highlight, I probably would have said District 1 because it's such an interesting race and it has so much on the line. Again, like some others, this has even more candidates in it, something like 9 or 10. These races are incredibly crowded. And again, there's ranked choice voting, so folks can pick a few of their favorites. This is one thing you got at. This race is really important in terms of Asian American representation in city government. That's obviously been somewhat of a theme in the mayoral race with Andrew Yang running. He's dabbled in this race a little bit, but there's only a couple of Asian Americans on the city council, and this is a race where that representation might actually vanish because there is such a strong candidate in Christopher Marte, who almost beat Chin in 2017 when she was running for re-election. So Marte is a potential favorite there, but there are a number of other candidates who are strong, including Gigi Lee, who has Chin's endorsement and who worked for her and is running a very strong campaign on serving the district in Chin's office. Jenny Lowe is another candidate who's gotten a pretty strong amount of support in that district. Maud Marin is also running. She's been very focused on reopening schools and education related policy. I don't know that I can give something on each of the candidates, but you have someone like Denny Salas, who's also running on a sort of pro-growth agenda there. and I'll leave it there, I guess.
Here's an interesting question from a listener on Twitter. It says, what city council races have public school parents running in them, and what are they saying? Public school families have gone through torture this year, and there's not a plan for the fall. So any public school parents running sort of prominently as public school parents that you're aware of?
Well, that picks up perfectly on Maud Marin, who I just mentioned in City Council District 1, because that's been a focus for her. But there are quite a few. I don't know the parental status of every single candidate, so I don't know that I can give you any percentages. But there's quite a few, including some in the very interesting district, City Council District 5 race, which is the race to replace Ben Kalos on the Upper East Side. And others. So it's definitely an issue. I would maybe disagree a little bit with the idea that there isn't a plan for the fall. I mean, we need to see a lot more details, but the plan right now from the city is that schools will be reopened for in-person learning. Students will be in school. I know there's details that still need to be announced and worked out, but that's the gist. And, that's one of these issues that's been part of many of these races, including the mayoral race and many city council races, that with this June primary and then another 6 months until these winners take office, some of these discussions will be very outdated by the time, these races are done and people will look back and say, oh, those issues that dominated the primary, some of those are really, the conversation shifted very much now.
Yeah, let's hope. All right, another listener tweets, please speak about District 10. That's Edonis Rodriguez's seat, covering Washington Heights, up through Inwood and Marble Hill. Ah, Marble Hill, that place that everybody thinks is in the Bronx, but as a political district is in Manhattan, just above the water there. So Edonis Rodriguez has been a prominent member of City Council, also term limited out. He's been the chair of the Transportation Committee, in the news a lot. So what's the race up there?
So this is another crowded race, but I would probably say this one is a little easier than some to narrow things down to the folks that seem to really be the front runners. It looks like sort of a three candidate race. And again, I'm very hesitant to do this because I want voters to, research the candidates and figure out who they like best. And with ranked choice voting, they can really, make their preferences known. But Assemblymember Carmen De La Rosa is, if not the favorite, one of the favorites. Anytime someone's trying to go from one elected office to another, in the same area, they're pretty well known and they have a very strong chance of winning unless they have some major scandal or something. Angela Fernandez has been a very active advocate, nonprofit leader, immigrants' rights leader in the area. And Joanna Garcia has been a very active aide to State Senator Robert Jackson and back when he was in the city council, especially with a major focus on education issues. So those three candidates look like they're the top tier there by a wide margin over others. I could be wrong. I'm not on the ground in these districts regularly, so there could be energy around some other candidates, but those three look really formidable and they each have, sort of accomplishments and issue areas that they focus on. But that's obviously a district, very immigrant heavy district, Latino heavy district that has a number of concerns coming out of the COVID crisis, including public health, small business, and there's always questions around development up there, gentrification, affordability, and such.
And we're going to leave it there. We can't go through all 10 city council districts for an overview. There's just not time. But again, this is just to give you a flavor of some of these races, listeners, and their ways to dive deeper now. The big thing is with early voting now and then primary day itself next Tuesday, and you can always mail in your absentee ballot if you have an absentee ballot, just to get as many of you Brian Lehrer Show listeners as possible to vote. There are different places where you can get more information about the candidates in your particular district. We have a voter's guide at Gothamist.com. The New York Times and Citizens Union together have a voter's guide. Ben Max, for you as executive editor of Gotham Gazette, I'm sure you have a voter's guide. You want to tell people about anything you have going?
Well, I'll highlight two quick things. There's a lot at GothamGazette.com of just coverage of all these races and the debates that I mentioned. And I did 30-minute video interviews with each of the Manhattan District Attorney candidates and the borough president candidates. So there's a lot we have at Gotham Gazette. We also created a tool on the mayoral race with the daily news on issues and comparing mayoral candidates on issues. And then I definitely want to point people to our colleagues at a new site called electnyc.org, where they can find information. Really, the city council races, it's a great resource for that at electnyc.org.
Let me do a little addendum on DA, because a couple of people called in and said there was one candidate for Manhattan DA whose name we didn't say, and we should at least say all of them out loud, and that's Diana Florence. Are you familiar with her?
I am. Yes, I noticed I didn't quite get to mention her, and I apologize for that. Diana Florence is running. She's a former prosecutor also, but she's running very much on issues related to labor and wage theft. She has other parts of her platform, of course, but that was some of the work she did in the Manhattan DA's office, and it's also a big part of her platform. Diana Florence, part of the reason I didn't mention her is because she has a pretty serious ethics issue hanging over her candidacy that was part of her Manhattan ADA tenure.
Uh-huh. So
So that's something folks should look into. And, you know, it seems to, I don't know how much it's held her back, but I don't know, you know, she's gotten some labor union endorsements from some of that work she's focused on, but I don't know how much steam she's picked up in part because of that hanging over her.
All right. Ben Max, executive editor of Gotham Gazette and host of the podcast, Max Politics. Thanks, Ben.
My pleasure.